Honestly Unbalanced.
Welcome to episode 101 of Honestly Unbalanced, where we chat to people that have tried to make your life a little bit better. The person we're chatting to this week is Francesca Golfetto. She is an incredible yoga teacher who's got 10 years experience as a professional ballet dancer and has combined some traditional styles of yoga like Ashtanga with her dance to create a fairly unique style of teaching, combining active flexibility, mobility, fluid movements, all without creating too much tension in the body. She's a great teacher doing amazingly on social media, and our conversation takes lots of twists and turns. You'll learn how yoga can open Norwegian people up, why your practice should be one that actually makes you feel good, whether a professional ballerina needs to perform in yoga, how to stay safe through the practice, and how to stay authentic on social media, and why contortionists even are stronger than you might initially think. Francesca, I, and Holly are all at Yoga Games in Stockholm on the 2nd to the 4th of Feb 2025, and you can use code Adam, or you can use code Holly, or code Francesca to get you 10% off. The code you decide is basically who you want to give money to. A little message from our sponsors. If you want the best yoga mat in the world from an ethical company that does wonderful stuff for the yoga community and beyond, you need to go for Lifeform. Lifeform I have used, I think, for almost 10 years. And my first gift to Holly was a blue Lifeform. They are incredible mats, and code HUSTLER10 will get you 10% off mats. Or if there is ever a sale on, typically my code will get an extra 5% off that sale. And if you want some cool clothes to go with those amazing yoga mats, I would say 90% of the time I'm wearing at least one colorful standard piece of clothing, typically their oversized sweatshirt. If you've never heard of Colorful Standard, they have lots of items, all amazing material, amazing quality, non-branded, as you might have guessed from the name, in loads of different colors. And I love their gear. Code ADAMHUSTLER, CS10, will get you 10% off anything from the Colorful Standard website. If you want timeless clothes that will never go out of fashion, head there. Two more sponsors. One, Vivo Barefoot. Again, if you see me out and about, pretty much I'm guaranteed to be wearing Vivo Barefoot. Most of us spend a lot of our lives wearing shoes that squeeze our feet together, walking on artificially flat surfaces. I've always been conscious of that and have tried to be barefoot literally as much as possible, but I was still a sucker for kind of fashion shoes and Reebok classics, which might not be fashion anymore. But since wearing Vivo Barefoot the last few years, my feet just feel so much better. My posture is better. I absolutely love them. I'm a big fan of their new motor strength shoes. And actually, I started to wear their snow boots in Lapland recently. And yeah, unbeatable and so easy to travel with. They just fold into a suitcase. And because I care about my little boy's feet, our little boy is wearing Vivos as well. So yeah, for your whole family, code ADAMHUSTLERVB will get you 10% off Vivo Barefoot. And finally, if you fancy joining Holly and myself on our little online platform, I say little, it's got a huge amount of content on. There are sound journeys, there's yoga classes, there's live sessions, there's meditations. Then using code, all caps, HU2024, that's H02024, you can get 25% off reoccurring memberships forever. Well, as long as you stay signed up. I'll let you go now. You guys enjoy the podcast. Honestly Unbalanced. I would love to know, because you are someone from a Mediterranean country in a cold land in Norway. And I'd love to know a little bit more in a minute about how you got there. But just before the conversation started, we spoke about it being super cold at the moment and making eye contact with people in the street. And the fact that when people are going through struggle, like cold weather, and everyone is kind of in it together, it kind of creates a really nice community. So I'd love to ask, beyond the weather, like, what is the community like where you are in Norway, but also in the yoga world and how where you are and how important that is to you?
So let's speak about, I'm Italian, so we live kind of outside, right? So we meet people all the time. You go to a coffee shop, like you look at your neighbor, your friend, and you just like, hey, good morning, you know, buongiorno. Like that's very normal. So when I got here, you're drinking your coffee, you look like, hi, and they look at you and they kind of just freak out because you don't do that. And that was kind of a little bit of a shock for me. So I think it's a bit known that Norwegian people in the north are colder. So I feel like in the city, you know, there's not a lot of eye contact. So that's why like now that it was super cold, people were walking out in the street, there were this eye contact. So like, oh, but then if you go to the woods, for example, so if you're doing hikes, if you're skiing, then everyone says hi.
Yeah.
So it's quite a very special, let's say, way of being. But I think they're quite reserved here, like or very. You know, and also to be honest, like you have jackets, you have hats, like you're so covered. You almost don't have the space. So. But in the yoga community is great. I've been practicing and teaching yoga here for 8 years. And I was first in Ashtangi. Mm-hmm. And I think Ashtanga was really, really strong then. So, like, you know, the rooms are bubbling, like people love it. And I feel like then people open up more. So the yoga community is great. And then outside of the studio, they become a bit more
reserved,
private.
Do you think it's that people need an excuse to let go and be more human? And because society in some of these Nordic countries is a little bit colder and less interactive, they want to find something that gives them the excuse to kind of let go. And that could be yoga, it could be dance. I know swinging is quite big in Sweden. What,
are you talking about swinging that I think you're talking about?
I think it is. Like, I learned that.
You know this.
I learned that recently. If you have a flamingo out of your house in Sweden, and you have a little flamingo statue outside, that means...
You know what? I had a flamingo in my terrace because my daughter loves it. And I was like, you know.
Did you wonder why people were knocking on your door?
So it's Norway as well. Flamingos are a thing in Norway as well.
Well, I heard about that after I had a flamingo out in my terrace.
We never know.
Probably.
So people let people need an excuse to let go, and yoga gives them that.
For sure. And I mean, I think yoga is much better than, for example, drinking, right? I think in the Nordic countries, like alcohol or drugs have been a huge deal because people just need to. And also, I think because they're so private, you know, they need like an excuse to kind of like, okay, I drink and I become more social.
Yeah.
So that's a bit sad. So much better to do yoga than that, I suppose.
Don't they get naked in the sauna though? Isn't that a thing? Like it's a rule, you must be naked in the sauna. Or am I thinking of somewhere else?
Not here.
Okay.
Not here, actually.
Why is that relevant?
But I...
Well, because we're talking about how they're quite reserved.
Yeah.
And then, but then when it comes to, so maybe that's another country then.
Okay. Yeah, no, but I guess it's... So carry on.
Sorry. No, I did live in Switzerland before coming here, and that you had to be naked in the sauna.
That's the one.
So we're and not Swiss.
Germany as well. Germany, certainly.
Yeah, you see.
Yeah. I wonder what that... I wonder, I'm sure there's lots of... Because I couldn't imagine doing that in somewhere like Italy. I imagine the Italians just couldn't roll with that. There'd be too much like... sexual tension and the like.
Yeah, I was about to say, I wouldn't do that in Italy either.
So maybe it's a fact that people are reserved. It allows them to be naked and sort of. This podcast could go in some weird directions. Yeah, yeah. So let's rein it in a little bit. Because it's quite early in the morning.
Bring it back.
We're all parents of young children.
I know.
How old are your children?
My daughter is 5, Nina, and my son is 2.
And how did that affect both your practice? Because, you know, on social media, everyone can see that your practice is obviously incredible to look at, very impressive.
Thank you.
But then, so I wonder how it affected both your practice and your teaching. And because you're a self-employed person, there's a lot of shift. Yeah, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah.
And how you manage that?
So I used to be an Ashtangi. Well, first I used to be a ballet dancer, so that's why also I'm here. And then I got injured and I was told that I could never dance again. So that was massive. We can speak about it later maybe, but it was a massive identity crisis and all crisis kind of. And I got married 6 months before. So I felt highly stuck in this country that I did not like at that time. Then, you know, I've practiced yoga. I think my first class, maybe I was 15 years old in London because my ballet teacher did yoga. And there's always been a calling for me to practice yoga, even though like I didn't even love it, to be honest, but I just saw myself going back and back and back. Then I came to Norway and I found Ashtanga. It was kind of too much with the ballet training that I did. You know, I danced all the time, so it dropped a bit. Weekends kind of came back, very random. When I got injured, it was ugly. I was depressed. I went back to Italy. It was a bit like, what do we do? But then I was like, okay, no, I have to practice. So there was like a clear, like one day I woke up, I'm like, I have to practice. So it was super clear. And I did. And I found my teacher at that time. And I think there was so much pettiness around me. Oh, poor girl, what are you going to do now? Oh, your dream. You know, it was like, and already when you feel sorry for yourself, that just made me, yeah, okay. But she was like, you come in and you practice. You come in every day and you practice. That was in the past. Now we look at your future. And it was just refreshing. And I did that. I went in every day and I practiced. And practice went very fast, like the primary series. My upper body had no strength, so all this chaturanga, I was dying. But, you know, I worked with my body all my life. So, like, the mastering the poses went quickly. At the same time, she started a teacher training, and I was like, okay, I need to fill up my days because I was still doing rehab at the opera for my ankle. That was what I hurt. And so I just wanted to be busy, to study. And I was very attracted to know more about the philosophy and all of that. So I started a teacher training with her, and after I was done with my 200 hours, she started at 300 hours and I got offered that and I was like, yeah, sure. And then I started assisting her in the Mysore room, you know, and all around where she was going and just was going with her. And the practice went, I was kind of crazy, you know, like I think in four years maybe, I was doing advanced serious. But I met, you know, amazing community, the best teachers. Like I feel, I don't know if you know Mark Roberts, but I met him in Norway and then I went to India. I think from the ballet training to Ashtanga was probably like denying everything that happened because I tried therapy, didn't work, but yoga did. And at first, you know, I cried so much on my mat, but it's also the hardness of the Ashtanga. I think I just needed that. It was almost like self-torture, not torture, but like almost self-pain, you know? And I knew that if I practiced, I would handle the day. And then, you know, you create new friends, new communities. So my life actually got really good. Like I was happy again and maybe happier even. But then I remember going, I was in India and then I came back from India and I got pregnant with my daughter and it happened very fast. So it was a bit of a shock, to be honest, first. And also I felt like I just found myself again. So it was actually scary, you know. And then as I practiced pregnant, if I did Ashtanga, I puked. Like literally my body just rejected it. And that was like going back to primary series, easy modified. I couldn't. Then I was like, okay, you know, I hear your body. What do we do now? So I think the the ballet, like, you know, the ballet mind and body and the softness, the fluidity, I felt like it healed a bit. So I started practicing with music and, you know, flow a bit what you see today, and I could do everything. So my body didn't stop me doing anything. So I was like, okay, that's good. And then you probably know, but when the baby was born, you know, if you have 20 minutes when they nap, you're not going to start doing a hundred sun salutation. You're more like, okay, what do I need now? I need back. I need to open. So it's like, okay, 20 minutes, let's do this. So it became very gradual and natural the way it moved. And then I started teaching that, because I, you know, I'm like, I have a bit of a good girl syndrome. So I feel like if I practice Ashtanga, I'm going to teach Ashtanga. If I don't practice it anymore, I'm not going to teach it. So it was a bit like that for my mind, in my mind at that moment. But also I really wanted to share something that made me feel so good in my body. So then I started teaching Vinyasa rather than Ashtanga. Very scary. You know, I remember playing music at first, feeling like the guilt. Oh my God, I'm playing music in yoga class.
What did your Ashtanga friends and your teachers say about that? Was there any kind of blowback? Traitor?
I'm sure. No one said it directly to me. And they, to this day, they're still trying to bring me back. I love Ashtanga, you know, it's not about that. But I also saw that the way that many people practice Ashtanga and the way I practice Ashtanga was not healthy at the end. It becomes too much, you know, simply, like, I think if you, yeah.
I'd love to speak to that, kind of about that in Ashtanga. There were some very mindful Ashtanga teachers that I'm aware of. So I don't know many, but there is Adam Keane. I don't know if you know Adam Keane. He's very mindful, very intelligent, non-dogmatic. But there does seem to be something about the maybe more dogmatic styles of Ashtanga teacher or Ashtanga style of practice that can injure quite a lot of people. And I guess lots of dancers, current and former, are naturally drawn to Ashtanga because it is hard, that perhaps reminds them of their dance coaching or dance training when they were younger. And obviously they are, in a sense, good at it because they have such range and such mobility. Do you think Ashtanga is the best for dancers? Do you think, for you, obviously it served a massive purpose, as you say, in terms of mental health and alike. So do you think it's the right choice, or could it do more harm than good, or it just depends on the person?
So I think, you know, for example, for dancers, I think we already have that discipline, you know, because you need to have that discipline. So in a way, no, you don't need it. If you need to build more strength, then I think for anyone that practices yoga, like Ashtanga is a great way to start, because it gives you so much knowledge on technique, on strength, and just simply like on, you practice, right? You learn that practice becomes your life. You bring that into your life. My first teacher, she was very light, like very playful. So I never felt that like the heaviness that Ashtanga sometimes can bring. I think Mark is, it was more grounded, but it's also so smart and intelligent in the way he approaches poses. So for me, it became more of a puzzle, Ashtanga, when I practiced with him. And also, it was great. I started practicing with Sharat, and that was awful. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. But I remember, actually, I was in Stockholm, and the primary series, there were 400 people moving at the same time with him. That was totally magical. I did the intermediate lead and I wanted to die. Like it was so painful and people were treated so bad. And that's when things turned for me. I'm like, okay, if this is Ashtanga, if he's the guru, like what people look up to, I'm done. Like I'm, you know, I've been through that. Like, you know, I've been through all these directors that pushed you down, made you feel like shit. Like I didn't do it for them anymore. You know, like the practice was mine. Because again, I've been through that drama all the time. I didn't need that in my life. So that was already like kind of an eye opening. And then my former teacher moved away, and another teacher came to the studio where I practiced, and I taught yoga. I teach yoga to this day. And she was very different. Very good teacher, nothing to say about that, but very heavy, if you want to say it like that. So I think, and to be honest, her energy in a way, like it came very close to my energy, because I can go so deep into things, and you know, and it was too much. And I remember at that time I used to do the advanced sequence, and she was like, every day you have to do all the intermediate, all the advanced. It was like a 3 hours practice. I was teaching yoga. I was like, I can't do it, you know. And then I remember speaking to Mark Roberts about it, and he was like, no, your practice is insane. You can't do all of that. That's too much. But then I started feeling guilty going to the studio, because I can't go to your room and do whatever I want, right? She didn't make that possible. So I started kind of drawing. I started drawing back, and I actually started getting injured, which I never did in my life in yoga. The only times I got injured was in that moment. And then I got pregnant. So that was in a way my way out of that. But in a way, it makes me a bit sad that it happened like that. Because I think Ashtanga is a really great practice, and it does bring like the energy that you find in a Mysore room. It's very magical, and it really makes you go in, go deep. But at the same time, it didn't. I think it helped me heal, but it didn't help me find myself. Because once again, I was told what to do, step by step.
Do you think that there's something in maybe attracting the teacher that you need at each point of, or in each chapter of your life, that you're sort of attracted to, even if it feels painful or uncomfortable? Do you think there's something in that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so glad I went through all these stages, you know. But again, I think I come also from an awareness, you know, through my life and my ballet career, I had no choice. Right? Like they tell you to do that, you have to do it, you know, whatever that is, even though you look at someone, it's like, are you crazy? Like, but it's almost like if they tell you to jump, you jump, you know, like it's anything.
Was there a point in your life where you felt like you kind of reclaimed your power back and you thought, oh, actually, I actually don't have to do that? Was there a kind of a moment where you realized that?
You know what? Lately, I think it took me that long. But I think it was maybe last year. You know, like this new yoga start. And I mean, I never did a vinyasa teacher training. So like what you see is my own knowledge of movements. I moved all my life. You know, I've worked, like I grew up with Pilates, and I've done lots of yoga like since, many years now, 20 years probably, or 20, I'm 35, I started 15, so it's been 20 years of my life. But it's very intuitive, it's very, I just flow, what feels natural. I'm very curious, okay, so this what transition can make. But I also felt that many people, especially at the beginning, people judge, you know, and people will judge whatever. And I remember there was a friend of mine that started saying, because I mean, my Instagram, for example, blew up now. It was very kind of random and very quick. But she was like, oh, you know, your Instagram is not working. Why don't you use your kids? That's why my kids were never on Instagram again, because I was like, they're not going to be a selling point. And then, of course, my passion is to teach. So it's like, oh, you need to make tutorials. You need to show that you're a teacher. You can't just move. And at first, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And I tried. And then, you know what? It took so much energy from me and time. And I mean, I film my videos with a phone on a yoga block on the floor, you know, and I just blow and I edit it on Instagram and that works for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like the moment I started to do these tutorials, like it was just too much. Mm-hmm. I have a work and 2 kids and I don't have one, the knowledge to do it because I wish I was good with computers or things I'm not, you know, or the time. So I was like, at that moment, I sat down and I was like, you know what? I just need to be me, you know? And I mean, one thing, I've been a performer all my life and I've worked with my body all my life. So my strength is to move. And I hope that that inspires people. And and then I know I'm a good teacher. Like I've loved teaching always. And I always thought that I would become a ballet teacher actually, because I never thought I would quit the dance like that. But then I had to sit down and just say, okay, this is me and this is what works for me now. And it's to practice in track pants because that's what I wake up in the morning or that's how I deliver the kids, you know, that. And that worked. And the moment I felt aligned to that, I felt like everything just started flowing more naturally. And that's when I didn't care about anything else.
I love that.
That's so nice. Holly mentioned before, she said you found the teacher that's right for you at that time. And I think there's definitely some truth in that. But at the same time, I think some people end up trapped with a teacher that isn't the best for them. Like you could take Bikram as an example. You know, so many people were devotees to him. Yeah. And there was lots of abuse that went on through that. So there was a lot, it's hard to navigate, isn't it? And I guess your background in that, you know, in the fact that you were exposed to, I guess, harsh teachers, choreographers from an early age, meant that you were maybe more receptive to that earlier of what you didn't want and what you weren't looking for. Whereas people perhaps are more vulnerable. And lots of people that come to yoga come from a vulnerable place, perhaps. They come to yoga to help fix themselves. It can be quite hard for them initially to realize, okay, that teacher's a little bit abusive, or that teacher makes me feel bad about myself, or that teacher's forcing me into injurious shapes or praising or glorifying depth. Now, what advice would you give to people, kind of in hindsight, of how to find a teacher that actually serves them in a beneficial way? Like, what should they be looking for, would you say?
I think I'm a true believer that yoga should, one, support your life and should make you feel good. I think naturally, especially if you feel that someone doesn't like you, you want to make them like you, right? Yeah. So naturally you want to impress. And just to remember that you practice yoga for yourself. You don't practice yoga to impress your teacher or anyone else. So you should find someone that makes, that brings the best out of you, that yes, challenges you, but also like, I mean, I love, for example, to bring lightness in my room. Like, you know, we joke, we laugh, and yes, to challenge people, because I feel like the moment you do bring a challenge, physical challenge or whatever in a room, your brain doesn't go anywhere, right? Your brain needs to be sharp. And that's what also brings the yoga back, right? You don't have a space or time to think about what you're cooking for dinner if you're in some sort of challenging pose. But I think, yeah, ultimately to just find someone that makes you feel better.
How did
in all ways, mentally, physically, spiritually.
Absolutely. How did you personally find the transition between I guess when you were a professional ballet dancer and everyone's looking at you and it's about performing to this real inward journey that yoga takes you on and how it's not about performance. How did you find that transition?
So at first, to be honest, I didn't even think about it, but then I remember, you know, when you walk in a Mysore room, for example, or an Ashtanga room, where everyone is kind of tight, you know, they all know each other, and then it comes a new girl, and the new girl can do stuff, you know, and I mean, the new girl at the time cried on her mat every day, so you know, if people looked at me, I got so annoyed. I'm like, what are you looking at? I was also like, I was very angry, like I had so much anger and rage within myself. So at first I was a bit like, just leave me alone in a way. And then And then I remember, especially back then they came all the comments that it was show off, right? That and that made me more angry, because I'm like, you have no idea what I'm just going through here. And then I think it just gradually, I think when you show that you're authentic, you know, when it's not that I show up for a week and then I disappear, or I do like whatever pose, you know, but then when they saw the effort and that I was real about my practice, and then it stopped. And now, you know, now to be honest, my practice is a self-practice at home. So I don't practice in a studio. And that is very nice and a bit lonely at times. And
Do your children get involved?
Yes, but they're a mess.
Which is beautiful as well.
I know, they start bringing literally like all the props I have around, and like they create little parkour sessions in the yoga mat. I think my daughter is getting more into it now, but when I try to teach her, I ask, do you want me to teach? I'm like, yeah. And then she looks at me and she's like, mommy, you do your things, I do mine. I'm like, okay, great.
From a shift in the gear slightly, from a physical perspective and your teaching, what are you looking for? If someone doesn't know the body and then look at your practice, it looks, and maybe as well, if someone not strong as you did it, it would look very like floppy, like going to extremes and dropping into joints, etc. But you're obviously naturally strong, so everything you do, you have full control over. You're not collapsing anywhere. Everything is engaged. So how do you, I guess, I'm assuming.
It's so strong.
So I guess the question is, how, when you teach a style like that, how do you ensure that the people that are super bendy, maybe not because they've done dance, but because they've got no strength and are just naturally flexible, how do you ensure they stay safe? But also, how do you ensure the people that are more restricted, that are very strong but don't have range, they don't feel like it scares them or put off because they can't do the things? How do you balance that? Making, I guess, the weak people who are floppy stronger and engaged, and the strong people more open.
I think that's the coolest things about class, you know, teaching a class. Like, I love that. So in my classes, of course, what you see on Instagram is me, it's creating cool flows to look at, right? Or like, it's maybe, so what I do, I never film my practice. So I do my practice and I'm like, okay, I should create some content. What did I practice? I put my phone and then I flow. So what you see on Instagram, yes, some of them I always bring to my class. But I work a lot on mobility, on active flexibility. So there is so much engagement, so much strength and stretch. And I always, always aim on creating space. So if, like, I mean, people know I'm quite anal about it, like from a low lunge, you know, it's always like close the ribcage, lift up, chest, and then, so you see that the flexible people, like I've been the one, for example, my low back has always been very open, you know, so I'm really working on creating that strength so that nothing hurts. But also then, because I think the moment you find that mid place, right? So you need to create the length, that space. It works for both the very flexible people and the stiffer people. So that's what I do. I think I also, you know, and that's also through Instagram, you know, I feel like I started, you follow or started looking at more flexibility coaches, contortionists. And at first, especially with contortionists, I was thinking, okay, they just don't have a spine, right? And then I was in New York a few years ago and I trained with one and she literally kicked my ass. Like, I mean, it was so much work. And it was conditioning. Okay, now you bend. So I think from that place, I started thinking, okay, this really does work. And for example, as a ballet dancer, I wish I knew what I know now. Because before, like, you know, I would put like a leg on a sofa and just in a passive split for like an hour, and then let's see if I become more flexible. But what happens is like, that's dangerous because you can overstretch, first of all, and then you'll never have the strength to hold it, right? So now I feel like I really know what my muscles need in order to engage and let go, and I never have pain, and I'm much stronger than I ever was, obviously, maybe different ways.
It's just thinking out loud about that, because someone who just looks at your feed wouldn't necessarily know all that you say there and all that you believe
in. I
know. And there's ups and downs there, because I'm a firm believer that there's nothing wrong with putting cool flows on Instagram. You know, there are a lot of people that say, well, that's, you know, I did a TV show once years ago when I was a lot bendier, and I was teaching a class to lots of like other bendy yogis, and it was filmed. And on social media, people were saying, this isn't real yoga. That's not what yoga is about. And I was like, no, all of these people do yoga. They've got a long-term yoga practice. They just happen to, yes, look good. But that's what they would do in their practice. And there was, you know, back and forwards debate on that. And there's always lots of people that want to say, you know, that's not real yoga. That's just bendiness. But I think it's absolutely fine on a visual medium like social media to create content that inspires. And then that brings people to the mat for the first time. And then they listen to how you teach, and they find stability, they find strength, they have the deep philosophical inquiry. So I just want to kind of stand up for the people that do the dramatic poses and are like, there's nothing wrong with that. And there are many wonderful people that don't do dramatic poses that are good teachers. Yeah. And there are people that do dramatic poses that aren't good teachers. But and vice versa. There are people that just do lectures that are just wrong. And vice versa. So I just think that everyone who has a judgment of any teacher should go to that teacher's class first and get a feeling of who they are. Yeah. Not judge anything based on a pose that they can do and what they can do with their unique body. Be their student. Go to their class with that, and this applies in any medium, not just yoga.
To be honest, like, first of all, I'm blessed with a very, very generous and loving community, so I feel like I'm getting very little of these kind of comments, which makes me very grateful. Mm-hmm. But it's also, you know, like I said a while back, about, you know, the Instagram thing. Like, I feel like when, and especially through COVID, you know, I feel like Everyone starting to do tutorials. And I'm like, how many tutorials out there can they be? And then I was like, okay, these people actually know how to make tutorials that look great, you know, with arrows and things. And I'm like, I don't. And also, I felt like I'm honestly too passionate about teaching to try to make you, let's learn a split in 30 seconds because you don't have the attention span to go to. Like, it's so it just feels, and of course I could do it, but is that going to make me different than anyone else's? You know, it's like, so I, at some point I sat down and said, okay, what's my strength here and how can I inspire? And I mean, what makes me feel good? It makes me feel good to move. You know, nice. I love moving and always loved it. And I think, and I mean, now, you know, through COVID, actually, when we went in lockdown here, I actually started to do live classes on my phone. And that was like just literally for my students. And that started as a like, oh, yeah, she's, and then many people joined. And then, like, a bit, I feel like everyone, those classes became Zoom classes. And then, now I open like an online studio. So like I have, so people have the possibility to practice with me if they want to. And, you know, it goes through monthly basis. So like, I feel like if you get interested about my style, like I'm offering, there is a place where you can practice for real without having me to teach through a reel.
I think social media now is hard work. Because there are so many apps, so much AI you can use, so many cameras, like to create. Like it used to be, like back in my day, do a post, a photo, and get 2,000 likes. Done. It took all of 5 minutes. And now, like, you need to put in so much work.
It's so hard.
And you're trying to create something kind of unique. but also you're trying to not sell yourself short. Because if all you do is comedy stuff, then no one respects you as a teacher. You know, you're not known for your teaching. And people, it's just, there's so much to it. I'm actually going to be leading some trainings in this going forward in social media. Because people, like, you need to either, I think, with your post, inspire, educate, or entertain. Or ideally a combination of those. And sometimes that's...
You do all of it.
Yeah, you can try and do all of it a little bit.
I think what you said...
I feel like you do.
But what you said is, what you said is key though. Just being yourself, being your most authentic self. That's what shines through in the end, and finding your avenue that works for you rather than trying to be everything to everyone, which is just exhausting, especially being a mum as well.
You know, I feel like when, you know, my... motto, let's say, like my, like a view for me is like flowing, not and not forcing. So I'm always like, what flows? When am I flowing? When am I forcing it? And also because, again, going back to when I danced, I feel like, you know, when you're like running against current, like I was forcing. And at some point when everything went to shit, like just say it, I was like, oh my God, you know, like, is not meant to be. Like I'm a fighter and I go through everything, but there was so much resistance there. And then when, you know, I started practicing and started teaching, I felt like everything was just flowing. Like everything was just opening up without even me looking for things. And he said, and it was the same back then when I tried to make the Instagram maybe more, let's say interested in the terms of teaching views, but like I felt like I was forcing myself. And then I was like, no, again, I'm forcing this.
People see through it as well, don't they, so much. I tried to do a video which is kind of like a motivational talk, and it didn't feel like me. And then Holly said, that doesn't look like you.
No, it didn't. It just, you know, when you know someone, it just doesn't, it just comes through you. It's not the words you say, it's the energy behind it that people feel.
Exactly.
Because I'm generally a sarcastic asshole.
Yeah, so you just want to keep being a sarcastic asshole and you'll be fine. Fly.
But that works then, right?
God, I said something awful to some of my teacher trainees who were like on my advanced kind of CP mentoring programs. I started end up like talking about how you need to get more client base because all your old clients are going to die soon.
That was in my lovely sound healing training, actually. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Well, it was more that like someone was saying that, yeah, they've got their lovely group of clients and that closed community, you know, they're all in their 70s. And I was like, well, I shouldn't say this, but I was like, that's really wonderful. But that client base is going to go somewhere relatively soon if you keep it closed. Like, you need to actually keep pulling people in. But I think I tend to be slightly harsh in my teaching, but in a loving way.
But he's got a very soft soul.
Exactly. So as long as people you know, get that, I can be quite intense, you know, and bring energies, but then people come back. Like, I mean, it's also like I teach in a studio here in Oslo, which is a big studio, so I have like quite a lot of different people coming in and out, and I've been teaching there since my Ashtanga days. So I just changed kind of myself. So I feel like a lot of energy goes into my in-person teaching, and that's what I really love to do. I feel like online, it becomes a bit harder when you have, for example, as I mentioned before, I warm up a lot. So like in my practice and in my classes, like warm up. And then you feel like, okay, I can do this now. So like when you try to, for example, go into, I don't know, let's say a scorpion class, right? Or yeah, if people don't know what scorpion is, bringing the feet towards your head in an arm balance, and you have 30 minutes to do that. Like, I find it quite hard, right? So you need to really log in your brain and try not to rush things but it's just, you know, I feel like it's very much, like I said, just finding yourself and decide what you want to do or you want to be. Like now, I love playing different music. Sometimes it's hip hop and then it's piano. Like, you know, I play all kinds of different music. I laugh in class. I challenge my students. That's also like, I spent so many years of my life being told that I was too loud. And, you know, I am Italian. I lived in the UK. I lived in Switzerland. And then I moved here. All countries that are a lot calmer, if you want to say it like that. And I stopped feeling sorry about that. So I'm like, here, I'm loud. I'm me.
Good. Where are you from in Italy? North or south?
Close to Venice, Padova.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay, so a passionate part.
Well, I don't know. But
where do you get your inspiration from now? Because you said you don't do lots of practice in public classes. So did you get your inspiration from other yoga teachers online, the dance world, mobility teachers, your yoga sutras? Where does any inspiration come from for you now?
Well, of course, you know, if you... let's say something about my Instagram feed. So me and my best friend keep sending each other memes, whether are like mama memes, you know, we're like struggling moms or funny. So my feed is like all random funny stuff, and then eventually appears some yoga. So like it was, it's through Instagram, some movements that I see, I'm like, oh, I'm going to try that. But I really just love digging on my mat, you know, and really just like now I play music, close my eyes, and I feel like, okay, where can I go? And then, of course, the teaching parts, I feel like the what I'm learning the most is, to be honest, from flexibility trainers. So I've done a few classes with some flexibility coaches, and I feel that's very cool to learn how, you know, there's so much engagements there. And I feel like it was very cool to see how my body responded to that. And that everyone, I think, needs more strength. And there is this big taboo in yoga that I feel like it's, you know, people get injured because they overstretch or like don't push away from downward dog or don't engage your glutes in back bends. I'm like, okay, let's just, you know, really study that, get into that, and then make sure that what I thought was right is right. So I think in the teaching from that, but simply also to just move on my mat. Nice. And finding myself, and then try to inspire others with those movements.
So we'll end with a little quick fire.
Well, I actually had a question in mind that I'd like to ask. Okay. As a closing question. So if you could give some words of wisdom or words of advice to your younger ballet self who had the injury from the self that you are now, what would you say to her?
So when I was injured or when I had the injury or when, or before?
However you want to answer it, when you had the injury.
So when... that, you know, when it's so hard for me because when I had the injury, it was so bad. Mm. You know, so I feel like nothing really could have made me feel better. But I think if I could say something to myself in general, well, of course, feel better that like now I have a much better life and I'm much happier than I ever was. So life didn't end there. And I'm happy I fought for that and found myself. And to the younger version of me, to don't be scared or afraid to be yourself, to be me, and to take that space and to never settle for less. Because I felt like a part of me was, you know, like through the years, I got smaller and smaller. I'm like, okay, okay. And I even stopped dancing because I was so scared to do something wrong. You know, you're like the moment I think you really go for it, you really dance, at some point you're gonna slip and fall because you try hard. Mm. And I was so scared of that because everything was about finding a perfection or also simply, and that's also something that it comes back to yoga for me. I invite a lot, move like you want to move and not like I tell you to move. Mm. Like you need to find yourself in the practice because you're never gonna be me. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of ballet teachers also try to make me exactly like their version, mm-hmm. which was never me. You know, they never tried to find me in there. And I think it's the same now with yoga, like, and especially from the way I move, right? Like, I've worked with this all my life, man. It's never going to happen. If you start yoga at 40, you're going to be able to do what I do. But you can find your own version of that. And I think that's what's great. And I see that people trust me on that because I see people close their eyes and they start, you know, snaking around. That looks great. So I think that is to really just believe that you're good enough and that, you know, we are unique and special in our own way.
It's beautiful Lovely. Place to finish. Thank you so much.
I should try and
thank you.
We should try and break through our comfort zone and see you at yoga games and come to that class.
Yes. Oh my god.
That's
yes.
That's the opposite of my vibe. Like flowing with my eyes closed.
Okay. Then you need to come in my first class and so in the morning one.
So we
flexibility because that's where we're flowing.
So we guys, just to listeners, we're all at yoga games in Stockholm. For me, it's one of the best conferences we've both taught there 4 or 5 times and then Malmo one, so back to Stockholm I think for what, number 4 number 5, and we're all there. And it's, do you know what weekend it is? It's February,
it's the 2nd to the 4th of Feb, so coming up really soon.
2nd to 4th of Feb, and if you want a discount, code Adam, or I'm guessing code Francesca or code Holly. Maybe not code Holly. It depends who you want to give money to, but you get 10% off. use code Adam or Francesca to get,
I think, why not me?
I don't know if you've got a code. Have you got a code?
I have got a code.
Okay, code Holly as well. And I think it's 10%, maybe 50. It gives you a percentage off the tickets. And guys, even if you don't live in Stockholm, it's well worth a trip. It's got so many amazing teachers, local and international. Really well organized. You know, some yoga events tend to be more like sales events with some classes tacked on. This is very much like a full on, I think 5-6 classes at a time, yoga and sound conference. It's more conference than it is festival. Yes, if you're into yoga, I think it's completely worth traveling. And not all of the classes are in English, but a lot. I take it you teach in English mainly.
I do.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the classes will be in English. And it's just worth a trip, even if you're not from the area. Cool. Thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you?
Well, on Instagram, it's under my name, and so francesca.golfetto, and on my website where my classes online platform is held, that's also francescagolfetto.com. If not, I teach in person in Oslo, and I'm planning more retreats soon. I have one more coming up in Nosen Yoga. If you haven't been there before, like, you should go.
Where?
It's so beautiful. Nosen is in the middle of Norway, middle in the mountains, and it's quite a big hub for Ashtangis. Actually, Alexander Medin opened it. It was an old Ashtangi. So I'm having a weekend retreat there from the 8th to the 10th, I think, of March. And then I'm planning more retreats, hopefully soon, in Europe.
Awesome.
Italy, amazing. Hopefully.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to see you soon. Thanks for having me.